Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Oh, a happy day.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to a special edition of our program. Today, I have as my guest Brian Deere. He is a British journalist writing for the Sunday Times and who has been at the center of a media investigation into the Royal Free Hospital study by Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Walker Smith, Murch, and others that were published in the Lancet Medical Journal showing a relationship between gastrointestinal illness, not uncommon in children with autism spectrum disorder, and the vaccine measles strain virus. Over the years, Brian has performed investigations into various drugs, including Septrum and Bactrim and Vioxx. Brian's findings into the Lancet study and the activities of Dr. Wakefield in particular led to proceedings of the General Medical Council in the United Kingdom that have been major news stories during the past year. Now, a recent set of articles in the British Medical Journal based on Brian's further investigations of fraud committed by Dr. Wakefield are again at the center of the MMR vaccine and adverse reaction debate. Nice to have you with us today, Brian.
How are you doing, Gary?
Good. Brian, first, I want you to have full opportunity, as any guest on this program would, to lay out your arguments that you have made in the media and to the various official investigations in Britain, and summarize, if you would please, the content of your articles in the British Medical Journal.
Okay, to try and bring it all together, essentially, back in 1998, Dr. Wakefield and others published a paper in The Lancet, which I think your listeners may know is a very influential medical magazine, suggesting that 12 families had turned up at one London hospital, and they brought with them children suffering with various developmental disorders, mostly autism. And the story went that the parents had said that their first behavioral symptoms of autism came on within just 2 weeks of their MMR vaccination. 8 out of the 12 said that they had their child had showed the first signs of autism within days of vaccination. And Dr. Wakefield then had these children admitted for an extraordinary battery of tests, including ileocolonoscopies, which is a colonoscopy, is pushing an endoscope as far into a human as you can go, all the way around to the small intestine, had them given lumbar punctures, MRI scans, had them drink radioactive drinks, and a whole five-day battery of investigations, out of which he claimed that they had a new kind of inflammatory bowel disease. And what I progressively did over a long period of time, and I can assure you I did not intend to spend this amount of time on it, established that he'd been paid by a firm of lawyers to create this evidence. He was being paid a very substantial sum of money, something like $750,000 to produce this information. He had no IRB approval to do this kind of research on young children. And ultimately that he fabricated the findings both by manipulating the admissions criteria for the study, where he was bringing in specific target children, and he also went through the results manually altering test results and diagnoses and histories of the children, so to create the appearance that there was a link between MMR and autism. And out of this work, Dr. Wakefield has lost his license to practice medicine. He has been fired by his employers in Austin, Texas. He has now been branded by the British Medical Journal a fraudster. They described his work as an elaborate fraud. And now I think he's consigned to the realms of being a freelance charlatan, preying on the parents of autistic children. So I suppose that sums up my position.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Not really, except that I kind of glad that it's come to a conclusion, I think, now, and I can get on with other things.
Okay. Let me then begin to ask some questions, if you don't mind, that would allow myself and others to have a broader perspective into this. First, in England, when a child is seen by any physician, a specialist or GP, the British law states that that is confidential. How did you get the private medical records of the patients?
Well, the initial information about the nature of the... I'll do it historically. The first thing that happened was when we published our first stories, and I did a television program where we showed, in addition to things I've already said, that Wakefield had patented his own vaccine, single vaccine for the prophylaxis of measles, and also that test results in his own laboratory contradicted the absolute core of his claims. He made a very serious mistake, and that very serious mistake was to sue me, the Sunday Times, and Channel 4, which is the television network here, for libel. He didn't want to pursue it. He straight away went to court and asked for the judge to have the action suspended. But unfortunately, the judge told him that he either had to put up or he had to shut up, and ordered him to proceed with his libel action. And in the course of that libel action, he was required to disclose the unredacted medical records, the hospital records of 11 of the 12 children. One of the children was American, so that one wasn't disclosed. Under legal supervision, with a lawyer in the room at all times, I read the unredacted medical records of 11 of the 12 children in his research study. Now, it's important to get the next point, because even as I was sitting there reading them, Wakefield's lawyers were in a taxi to the High Court in London to abandon his libel litigation. And indeed, when I got home, having read the children's medical records, I got home and I had a phone call from my lawyer saying the action has been abandoned. Wakefield would now pay our costs. And I think the costs ultimately were $800,000. I think his insurers and people picked up a bill of, I don't know, £1.5 million, which is like $2 million or something like that. Now, it's important to understand this, because I did read those medical records, but I could make no use of the information within them, nor have I ever. And if you were to say to me, well, what was in those medical records, I wouldn't tell you. Because you can't use material disclosed for litigation in any other collateral way. You can't just, like, move it over and publish it. So that's the first thing. So confidentiality was protected, and a court enabled me to read those, in fact ordered that I should be able to read those. And then what happened was that in the background to all this, there was a hearing, as you've mentioned, by the General Medical Council into Wakefield's conduct. And during those hearings, which went on for 217 days between July 2007 and May 2010, the medical records were then laid out by teams of lawyers who read them into the record, often many times, seven or eight times probably in some cases. So whilst I could make no use, or nor did I make any use of the confidential information that was granted to me by the court in the libel litigation, I couldn't unlearn that material, and certainly it was with that knowledge in my mind, because you can't take something out of your head. I sat through the hearing of the General Medical Council, where the records were laid down, and then last September they published a transcript of the entire proceedings, and that runs, I think, to about 6 million words. So there's nothing nefarious or anything secretive or improper about my access to this information.
All right, fair enough. Did a Professor Tom McDonald at any time give you any medical records of any of the children?
No.
Okay.
No.
Now, also...
Why? I don't know why you'd even mention him, no.
Okay, I'm going through this. Now, when you leveled your charge of fraud against Wakefield, by extension, you were also charging fraud by the other individuals.
No, because the other individuals, one of the things that came out of the whole thing, and really one of the most extraordinary aspects of it, because I'm primarily interested in the research integrity and research fraud aspect. I'm not actually particularly concerned in terms of my investigation with the issues to do with autism or vaccination. And I know what they all are, and I'm familiar with all the background, but that's not really where my orientation is. The fact is that the way these this thing unfolded, I had no obligation, I had no expectation doing anything other than laying into the public record what it was that Wakefield had done. What was your question again, sir? I've rather over-talked you.
Okay, let me go back to what I was asking.
Yeah, sorry.
Which is important. In the charge of fraud...
Oh, yes, whether it was the others. No, because that's what came out. That's what I was getting to. The other authors didn't actually know which child was which. It was an extraordinary situation where there were 13 authors, but the other 12 really couldn't speak to the veracity of the data. And that's why one of the things I found so interesting about it was that one author, Andrew Wakefield, was able to write up the paper. He claims based on their medical records and the information that they provided to him. But in fact, they didn't know. I mean, one or two of them, the senior clinician, John Walker Smith, I think, certainly did have a case to answer. And he was accused of dishonesty by the General Medical Council. But that charge failed because the standard of evidence was so high. The standard was the criminal standard of proof. Wakefield was found guilty on 4 counts of dishonesty: research dishonesty, financial dishonesty, and lying to other doctors who tried to understand what his methods were. So it's not an accusation against the other doctors of dishonesty or fraud. It's squarely an allegation against Wakefield. He did it.
All right. Now, specifically, when you were calling the original study fraudulent, are you suggesting, or did you suggest, that anything they were doing with the children, for example, doing biopsies or anything else, was unethical or illegal?
Well, that charge was made by the General Medical Council. It wasn't from me. I supplied them with the information. I supplied them with the ethics committee papers that had been disclosed under freedom of information and various other bits and pieces. And I said to them, I am a journalist. I mean, I'm not an ethicist, but it seems to me that the only basis upon which you can go into the guts of children or stick needles into their spines or tubes down their throats or get them to drink radioactive drinks or whatever is if it was for the medical benefit, the clinical benefit of that child or that patient, or usually in the case of children, it is approved by a research ethics committee, an institutional review board. And it seemed to me that it wasn't. But it wasn't for me to form that judgment. It was for the people who were expert in those areas and who were able to gather all the evidence which proved the case. And they found, in addition to the 4 counts of dishonesty, they found Wakefield guilty of something like a dozen charges of essentially assault on autistic children. It was causing children to undergo medical procedures shouldn't have had.
Okay, I would like for you to hold your thoughts for a moment while I share some information with you in this audience,
sure.
And then you can respond.
Sure.
One of the things that's confused many people when they look at this is the assumption, based upon the charges and allegations made against Wakefield and the other 11 involved, that somehow there was a conspiracy, they were doing unethical tests, that the original medical records that they were given did not match theirs, and therefore that was the fraud. But I have in my hands specific documents from the Royal Free Hospital, specifically starting as early as February 27, 1997, from a Miss Maureen Carroll, Secretary of the Ethical Practice Subcommittee, by a J. Walker Smith, M.D., asking specifically that taking of extra mucosal biopsies for research purposes during the course of the upper endoscopy in children. And I have over a dozen such requests, so that in point of fact, with the consent forms for research biopsies, So any actual research done by the doctors on their intestines and the biopsies taken from the documents I have signed by the Royal Free Hospital and instigated by the members of that 12 research team show that they had actually sought research approval, sought approval, and received approval for the biopsies they did. Secondly, I also know, and it's...
Well, should we deal with that one? Do you want to deal with that one first?
Yes.
Well, this is an old canard. I mean, you have to understand this hearing went on for 217 days. I don't know how long you've spent on it, but the approval for two research biopsies was something that was taken over from Walker Smith. The senior clinician brought that permission essentially with him when he transferred hospitals. These children didn't just undergo two research biopsies. They underwent ileocolonoscopy, lumbar punctures, barium meal and follow-throughs, EEGs, MRI brain scans.
All of which were necessary by these specialists. These were 12 of the best specialists, all board certified. Let me finish my thought, please.
You see, Gary, what you're trying to do is you're trying to second guess. It's like it would be like doing the O.J. Simpson trial. I mean, this hearing went on longer than the O.J. Simpson trial.
If you would, I need to ask the questions, please.
Okay. Well, okay, but so what I'm saying is that you're trying to second guess a hearing.
I'm not second guessing anything because I also have documents showing that these doctors started from scratch. They could not use the older information, which mainly came from general practitioners who were not specialists, were not looking for a specific illness related to the gastrointestinal tract. These were people who did not have that specialization. These people came in effect, having to do all new, in-depth histories, and therefore it would be no different in the United States if you went to a general practitioner who could not find the cause of your illness and could not help you, and if they referred you to a specialist and it was not Wakefield who selected his patients. There's no evidence of that. These people didn't cherry pick their patients.
With respect, Gary, he did. This is a lot of the evidence that was heard. He was phoning the individual family doctors and he was phoning individual patients to get specific target patients into the hospital, and having got them into the hospital, they then were sought referral letters, and the referral letters would very often set out quite clearly in some cases that children had shown developmental problems before they were vaccinated. In other cases, the letters and other materials that were gathered together and the histories taken at the hospital itself show that other children had their developmental problems many months after vaccination, and not within 14 days, as Wakefield claimed, the official pathology results from the Royal Free's pathology service showed that none of these children had inflammatory bowel disease, and those results also were changed. And I think it's very difficult for you, and I kind of quite sympathize, because, you know, I think you've sort of got it into your head that Dr. Wakefield is somehow progressive or somehow putting forward ideas that would somehow match with your own worldview. And in fact, they don't. He's an extremely conservative doctor who performed really very unscrupulous procedures, or had them performed on these children, contrary to their clinical interests.
Okay,
feel that you know better than a panel of doctors and lay members who sat for 217 days to consider these issues.
It depends. First of all, in that, absolutely, I challenge that. Look, one of the things I've done in my career is find that when people have been completely convicted, we were able to go in and show, for example, that none of their patients were allowed to testify. And
why didn't he appeal? His patients were allowed. Dr. Wakefield called no witnesses, no parent, no fellow doctor, no nurse. Nobody was called in his support. He has abandoned
any
attempt.
Some of the patients did try to appear and testify before the hearing.
I've heard
from the patients. I've heard from the parents who said that.
Well, didn't he call? It's in a trial. I mean, could people turn up? Could I have said I would like to address the O.J. Simpson hearing?
No,
of course
but turning up, they were there outside protesting because they weren't given an opportunity
to testify and show
their evidence.
In adversarial, you have to understand, Gary, in adversarial proceedings, for somebody to give evidence, they have to be called by one or other of the parties, either by the prosecution or by the defense. You can't just turn up and say, I would like to say something.
No, but also, it is. I have spoken with the people involved who said that they have evidence that would have shown that what Wakefield was saying and their experience with their children was correct. Here's another question.
Why didn't he call them then? Why didn't he call their evidence? Why didn't he bring... In fact, the only parent that gave
evidence... I haven't spoken with him on
evidence,
that issue. Here's a point. I just like to go through some points, please.
All right.
Did one or more sources in the Royal Free Hospital London pass you any confidential medical information and documents regarding the treatment of the children at the hospital?
No.
All right. So you had no one providing you with documents from the MMR vaccine injury litigation regarding these children?
Oh, that's a separate issue. The MMR litigation, which occurred in the UK, the expert reports from that were stored on a CD-ROM, and I certainly have a copy of the CD-ROM.
Okay, but this was before it would have been possible for you to have obtained any documents in your libel proceedings with Dr. Wakefield and before the General Medical Council hearing took place, in which some information from the medical litigation documents were made public. How would you respond to the claim that you may have been aiding and abetting counseling with the counsel in this case against Wakefield?
Well, I wasn't. I wasn't aiding and abetting anybody.
But it was your information that led to the investigation. It was your claims that led to this.
Well, yeah, but the thing, the key information were ethics committee papers, the IRB papers. Those are obtained under something which Wakefield could never have possibly anticipated. America's had it for years. But in 1997, which was just shortly after this work was done, an incoming Labour government committed itself to a Freedom of Information Act. And under the Freedom of Information Act, for the first time ever, the papers of institutional review boards, what we call ethics committees, became publicly available. And I think I was the first journalist ever to obtain ethics approval papers under the Freedom of Information Act. And there's no secret about that. I mean,
okay. That's fine. I don't have a problem with that. All journalists want to use that. There was a detective from the Metropolitan Police Holborn, London, and the Crown Prosecution Service that investigated passing on medical information, but there was insufficient evidence.
That's
no
right.
One could be identified.
A Mrs.
How did you receive the documents about the children in the Lancet study?
Well, I've just told you. There is a mixture of the Freedom of Information Act and the GMC proceedings. I've told you, and the ethics committee papers. I say is perfectly above board. There's nothing wrong with that. And it was a Mrs. Isabella Thomas made a vexatious complaint to the hospital. She got completely the wrong end of the stick, confusing the ethics. She wrote me an email saying, "Well, you've got secret papers," and I said, "Well, yes, they were difficult to get." And I was talking about the ethics committee papers, and she got some weird idea that I was talking about her child's medical records, for God's sake. And so she rushes off and makes all these vexatious complaints to the hospital and the police and, you know, the Archbishop of Canterbury, probably. But it was all a complete piece of nonsense.
All right. Why were not the parents, again, I'm going to go over this, because you're claiming Wakefield or the other defendants did not choose to have them. I'm hearing different. The British Protection Data Protection Act, Section 55 of the Data Act of 1998 states that makes it offense to obtain or disclose personal data or the information contained in personal data or procedure to disclose to any person of the information contained in personal data if the person acted knowingly or recklessly without the consent of the data controller.
So what's your point?
To that?
I don't understand your point.
Well, at some point, when all this information about the children and their conditions became public knowledge, and that information is in on websites or is distributed.
Well, there was no confidential information about these children on websites that I'm aware of. I don't know what you...
How did you use material from the records on your blog?
Well, if it was subsequent to the GMC hearing, it would have all come out of that hearing. I mean, it went on since 2007, July 2007 it started.
Okay, let me read one statement here from one of the parents, and I'd like for you to respond to it, please. Quote, "I do not know Brian Deere personally. It's unbelievable that..." Let's see what she says here. when he was on American TV, he was making out to be the children's savior and was speaking about the poor parents on blogs and emails. He seems to be focused very much on me among the parents of the children in Wakefield's Lancet study because he thinks I'm out to destroy him, which is absolutely bizarre to think of that. And this is what he says to us and a lot of us parents, quote, "The festering nastiness, the creepy repetitiveness, the weaselly deceitful obsessiveness all signal pathology to me," unquote. And what he said to another mother of a sick child, quote, "They wonder why their children have problems with their brains," unquote. He also thinks the parents are doing this for both emotional comfort and financial gain. If so, he doesn't care at all about us or our children. And long before Brian Deere made this all up against Andrew Wakefield, long before this went to court or anything to do with the Lancet study, there was a meeting of the Joint Committee on Vaccination, and the minutes are available from the meeting minutes of the Joint Commission on Vaccine and Immunity, which are available through the Freedom of Information Act. And it is apparent that reports of autism associated with MMR vaccine have been received 2 to 3 years before the publication of the paper by Dr. Wakefield and co-authors, but the Joint Committee on Vaccine decided to take no action. You can get this through the Freedom of Information, and it is apparent and it is a parent that reports autism. So long before this Lancet report, parents were talking about autism associated with the MMR, and this was 2 to 3 years before the publication of the paper. Now, when my children started getting dizzy or getting bizarre bowel symptoms and high fevers, I'm talking about 40-plus fevers, rashes, blood in their stools, I kept taking them down to the doctor's surgery in the local hospital. I was so desperate because I knew there was something wrong. Neurologically, they were starting to behave very odd. So this is not like a normal autism at all. When they were physically ill, they were much more autistic, much more neurologically affected. When they started to feel a bit better, the neurological symptoms eased. The minute I mentioned the MMR vaccine to the doctor, it was like he was scared. It was like I'd mentioned something horrendous, and so they were not interested. They weren't interested in how sick the children were. I searched and searched for a doctor that actually had a child with autism. This doctor, who gave evidence that the General Medical Council gave single MMR vaccines to parents at a price through a local chemist. I started telling him the symptoms, and he said, you're actually describing the symptoms of my son. He was very concerned with my eldest son, Michael, because he was in agony. Can you imagine having a child, my youngest son, laying on the CD and going, "Help me, help me," and there's nothing you can do to help? Parents were being accused of Munchausen syndrome. Parents were so scared. They really were. They started trying to accuse me of fabricating symptoms of just awful things. I said I didn't want any more vaccines. So they said I was abusing the children. Local hospitals everywhere never had all the files, and files were full of referrals to consultants seeing the children, but none would fully investigate. None of them examined any of them properly. None of them wanted to know because of the MMR vaccine. I was told by a parent about Dr. Wakefield, who was looking at bowel disease and measles. I phoned him up and told him about the way my children were in such pain. He listened and told me that the Royal Free has top specialists in bowel disease, but it was up to my doctor to decide if a referral should be made. This doctor eventually said that Royal Free Hospital. It's the best in the country. He was interested because his son, having the same symptoms, knew about the study. They had the best gastroenterologist. He referred Michael, and at the time they were doing the study as well. And that's how I met the team at the hospital, which included Dr. Wakefield, Professor Walter Smith. Michael was referred because he was sick. It is as simple as that. He was a sick boy, and Professor Walker Smith was absolutely fantastic. They sent me down, and another doctor took a full medical history. Bear in mind, they don't have the notes from the general practitioner or anything since Brian Deere is comparing notes from the general practitioner to those of the study. I was treated with the utmost respect, and for the first time ever, I did have a doctor or doctors that were listening to what I had to say. Even though it was a study in a way, it was still a clinical appointment. It was still looking and doing everything for the children. I was kept fully informed about all this. I was told that my children's names would not be seen on the study or in the clinical notes, and it would not impact their treatment. In conclusion, so I absolutely was shocked when Brian Deere started to say that the boys were not ill. And this is what he was saying. He needs to come. He needs to come in to wipe their bottoms. He needs to watch them while they're sick. He just needs to see how they behave neurologically. One minute they can be worse than the next. He needs to see that this is a disease that seems to be progressing with the children. It's not something where you can have autism and the child is healthy. The virus from the vaccine measles strain is eating away at them. It's horrendous. And you know, for me as a parent and other parents that I speak to, it's a nightmare. It's such a nightmare because nobody seems to want to tell them and help them. And that is the problem. So Brian Deere is saying they don't have autism. Now, what does he mean by they don't have autism? They've been to an autistic school. You don't get into there for fun. They have had diagnoses of autism, OCD, PDA, PDD, Asperger's syndrome with complex needs. They have a statement of special educational needs. I took them to America because at the time the Royal Free Hospital started to panic. They were literally throwing out children because the government stopped funding the hospital for the children. I had a meeting at the Royal Free Hospital with some of the top guys. The chief executive at the time, Martin Else, was one of them. At that meeting with a couple of parents, they said to us that our children were putting Crohn's and colitis patients at risk because the hospital was being inundated with so many sick children they couldn't cope with it. Funding was also withdrawn for our children. So they said that we would have to fundraise ourselves to get any further support. That was quite a shock to us. Eventually, my youngest boy was referred to another top gastro hospital in London. There, the doctor said he had got an irritable bowel. Because of what they were hearing on television, they didn't want to touch them. By this time, because the treatment had ceased, I took them to America, and this is what this was with my local doctor's permission, because you could see there was something wrong. What came back was the disease had progressed. There were lesions. There were abscesses. It had gone to the top of one of my son's bowels. And in the biopsy report, it was active inflammation. One of my son's esophagus displayed inflammation. He had bad reflux. So you know, Brian Deere seems to think he knows best, but he doesn't. When I returned, I told the consultant in the United Kingdom, quote, here, this is your irritable bowel disease. And he said, you're going to have to look at the way we treat these children, but he still was scared. He's doing it behind the scenes. Everybody here is scared. They found the measles virus in the gut of both my children and others. Then they looked at the blood, and with my older one, they found that it came back negative. When Michael started to have symptoms, it's like he is crashing. They'll have a week or two without any symptoms, and then they'll have it, and it's like bad flu. And I said, please do the blood test while he's having these symptoms. And they did, and it came back with high levels of the vaccine virus strain of measles. So we know it's in there. We know it lays dormant and it comes back. It begs belief, but it's going on here. It's child abuse. Our children are being used as political pawns. It is the same thing with the GMC. They interviewed me for the GMC. They wouldn't use my statement in the GMC hearing. I sat through that with Brian Deere sitting in the corner. I was listening to the most horrendous lies. I was listening to the GMC lawyer saying we parents were liars and that the children aren't sick, which is unbelievable. I complained to the GMC. Other parents complained to the GMC. I said I have proof from top gastroenterologists. I have seen the photographs. I have seen the colonoscopy reports. What more do you want? They didn't want to listen to us. Your comments, please.
Oh, you're over to me now. Well, this is Mrs. Isabella Thomas, who I was telling you made the vexatious complaints to the police and caused all kinds of trouble everywhere she went. She spoke about her GP in these particular circumstances, and he, in fact, gave evidence to the General Medical Council. And he said, he was getting increasingly concerned about the amount of intervention that she was requesting, and he said that he felt her demands were, quote, detrimental to the health of her children. He said, quote, she did vary her histories from time to time and that it was difficult to be certain what she was telling different professionals. There was a history of her consulting several professionals for one problem and then take the answer she required. And then he said, I think it's very difficult to be consistent in my answering about a drug that he was asked about in the sense that she was a very confusing person and the story would vary between consultations. It was difficult to get a consistent pattern. At times she would say it's fantastic, made a huge difference. Then a week later it would be a different story. So that's her own GP criticizing her in front of the General Medical Council. She was also criticized by her local hospital and also by the Royal Free itself, who'd all had trouble with this particular mother. Now, I don't criticize her particularly for her character or her general behavior, but I think it's wrong, Gary, for you just to simply to assume that somebody who writes a long letter like that is necessarily telling the whole story. And the most important thing I think you need to bear in mind is, and I think a lot of your listeners will understand this point, is that children with developmental disorders go through healthcare systems with some of the most comprehensive medical documentation that any patients will receive. One of the things that really came out of the GMC hearing was the enormous care and dedication that doctors in primary care, in hospitals all over, gave to these children to try to help them. In fact, autism and, if you like, autisms, these cluster of developmental problems and issues, if that's there, are very, very difficult to deal with. So when somebody like Andrew Wakefield, who comes along, who in my judgment and based on the evidence which was put to the editors of the British Medical Journal, who described his research as an elaborate fraud, when he comes along, offers very simplistic ideas, oh, it was the MMR vaccine, that's the reason, and there's a conspiracy by doctors and drug companies and by Brian Deer and whoever else to conceal this harm to children. When he comes along with that, it can be very appealing to certain kinds of individuals, and I think Mrs. Thomas is one of them, who out of that find a simple answer, somebody to blame, and a way of reconciling the issues that are in front of them. So I don't think you should just believe these things or read out these great long letters making these allegations,
okay,
because
here,
individually they're not true, and where they are true, they're usually of not great import in terms of what you're actually saying about the matter in hand.
Well,
nobody said that these children weren't ill. Nobody said that these children didn't have developmental issues. Nobody said these things at all. But somehow or other, these ideas, quite often taken off little websites like the one Mrs. Thomas operates herself, somebody has an anonymous website, puts out this kind of information, then it gets spread around so as to cause great confusion and misinformation to parents, and I think it's the wrong thing to do. And I think you personally should try to get to the bottom of some of these things and actually engage your own skills of inquiry rather than simply reading things in that way that you just did.
I don't just read anyone's letter without first doing research and asking for documentation. Here's the other side of this, Brian, and I'm sure as a reporter you could appreciate this. Hundreds of thousands of parents in the United States, and I'm only referring to the United States, I've interviewed thousands. In fact, I would go to their homes and look at the whole history of their medical profile on their children, not just with autism, but a full spectrum of conditions that they claimed happen. They would show me movies, they would show developmental issues that were normal till a series of vaccines, and then the child was lost. Then they showed me how a torturous process of having anyone acknowledge this as being from the vaccines. In fact, the underreporting of adverse effects, according to our own FDA, is about 92%, meaning
8%. But why are you putting this to me? Do you think I disagree that there's underreporting of adverse effects?
I'm only making a statement. I'm not saying that you would agree or disagree with what I'm saying. But what I am saying is that when I talk with these parents and take real time and go through meticulously, when I went to Chicago, I met with 400 parents and their children, who had all, including medical doctors, including a professor of medicine, who all had children with autism, but they had done meticulous research, and they all had a common view.
And
the
does view that authorize Andrew Wakefield to fake his papers?
This had nothing to do with Andrew Wakefield.
Does that mean that these parents should rally around an outrageous charlatan?
No, that's your view, and
you
have a right.
Well, it's not my view. It's the view of the editors of the British Medical Journal.
Okay, and they have a right to their view,
who,
but
who looked into this and went through all my research for fact-checking and peer review.
Okay, and you've come to your conclusions.
Of the UK General Medical Council sitting for 217 days, subject to review by the High Court, and Dr. Wakefield has not appealed. He has been erased from the medical register. Had he been innocent, he could have appealed.
But one of the other people who lost their license is appealing. What I'm saying is that...
Yeah, but Wakefield isn't.
But for... This is not about Wakefield. This
well, it is,
about,
is. That's why you've got me on your program.
No. This is also because you made a statement about how I shouldn't take what this person was saying seriously because it could be wrong.
No, you shouldn't take it seriously. You shouldn't necessarily believe it's necessarily true in all the aspects that it's
but
set out like that.
But unfortunately, the medical community in the United States has not accepted the person who has vaccine damage, no matter what the type of damage is, as legitimate. They have to jump through hoops. Most are denied, and then they have to spend the rest of their life, if they do have an autistic children, paying for that out of their own pocket.
Well, at least you're pointing that out as a fact, because Dr. Wakefield went on Fox News just a couple of days ago and said the U.S. vaccine court had accepted that MMR caused autism. So, you know, this is a man who is not marching in step with you. You might think that he is, but I came on this show to talk about research.
I'm not a friend of Dr. Wakefield, all right?
Well, neither am I, but I'm not here to argue for vaccination
or any particular issue. And how this actually came about. Here's a point, and I want to get back to this. Maybe you answered what you thought was completely clear to me. I just have to make it very clear. Do you have the CD about on all this, and did you disclose that to any third party?
Did I get a copy of the MMR litigation CD?
Yes.
CD-ROM. Yes, I did.
Okay. Under British law, as it states today, are you required by court order? Because disclosing any third party requires a court order, including today. Are you aware of that?
Well, it's a complicated situation. The person who released that would have been committing, I think, a contempt of court, yes. And if I was to publish the contents, I would be committing a breach of confidence. But then, if you want to be legalistic about it, there's a public interest override. Were it to be in the... I mean, to be absolutely honest with you, Gary, were it to be there any public interest involved, I would be perfectly entitled to publish all the names and medical records of all these children, if I had them, or what was on the GMC. In fact, the GMC has done it. They've published the medical records of these children in their own transcripts of their hearings.
Okay,
But there is no public interest in disclosing this information, so one wouldn't do it.
Okay, but we also have to realize that both in the United States and in Great Britain, and I believe you were responsible for helping to expose some of the cover-ups in the past, we have in the United States a great deal of government cover-ups and withholding information in trials. We have drug companies concealing data.
Sure.
And so I do not for a second believe that because the government comes to any decision that in and of itself that makes it true, because we've seen too many cases when they've lied. Also, each of the patients, each of the 12, kept an individual yellow diary. Those were never brought up in court, and yet those are relevant because those show what the parents were responding to, and they're the ultimate experts
anything relevant would have been brought up. I mean, with respect,
but they weren't. They were.
Well,
those were never exposed.
With respect, it was a judicial hearing conducted to the highest standards of law, to a criminal standard of proof. Dr. Wakefield was very adequately represented, and he could have brought up any evidence that he wanted, and the evidence that he brought forward was considered at very great length, and he was ordered to be erased from the medical register for dishonesty, four counts of dishonesty, and more than a dozen of arranging assaults on autistic children.
Did you have the documents in hand, or were you aware of the documents that I reported earlier that prove that permission was granted and accepted and granted by the hospital for them to do those reports? Were any of those presented at the trial?
Go back again and say that. Say what do you?
Do you remember earlier in our discussion? I read you specific letters where the doctors and the 12 doctors were asking permission to do different types. And by the way, I have.
That was absolutely, of course, the Maureen Carroll letter. Oh, absolutely, of course, that was in evidence. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
Were all of those requests in evidence?
Everything that you've mentioned, yes, was in evidence, of course.
Okay.
So that's how they got them. That's how the people who gave them to you got them.
Okay, there is no appeal of the General Medical Council hearings. So what role
has
the...
No, there is. He was entitled to one, but he declined to take up that opportunity.
I was not aware that there was an appeal process.
Oh, yes. The General Medical Council, you can appeal from the GMC to the High Court. And I think you just said that John Walker Smith is doing so.
Yeah, one
Andrew
is.
Wakeford had the opportunity to, but he's not appealing.
What is
so
the
he's
role
accepted
the
verdict.
What is the role the British Medical Journal playing as a lobbying... in the effort to sway a decision against the appeal?
Well, it isn't.
But it published these articles condemning him. That's a very strong...
That's not lobbying.
Well, lobbying? Of course it's lobbying. When
it's just journalism. It's just publishing stories. It's not lobbying anybody.
Well, depending upon the outcome, if you're saying someone's a fraud, that's trying to convince others that there's
no,
a fraud.
Well, it's not trying to convince a court.
Hold on a second. Hold on. Just a personal question, please. How do you feel by the fact that the Lancet study has been independently confirmed by other later studies?
Well, it hasn't.
Oh, yes, it has.
Well, no, it hasn't, Gary.
So
I mean, let me
there
explain.
Is a likely causal relationship between measles and gastrointestinal problems.
Well, let me explain.
A recent Harvard study in particular.
Well, just hold on, Gary. Let me just explain what the situation is. Wakefield's paper claimed to find regressive autism and inflammatory bowel disease in a temporal association with the MMR vaccine. That's what the paper claimed. Now, there has been many papers going back to the 1930s, at least, showing that people with developmental issues, which in recent decades has come to be called autism quite often, have a higher incidence of gastrointestinal disturbance. And there's all kinds of reasons why you would expect that to be the case and why that may be the case. But producing a paper showing that an autistic child has inflammatory bowel disease or an autistic child has irritable bowel syndrome or food intolerance or whatever does not validate or confirm or replicate Wakefield's claims at all. Of course, autistic children have bowel disease. They also have diabetes, they have heart disease, they have cancer. They have every kind of disease that other humans have. And to suggest that anyone has ever said that children with autism don't have bowel disease is just so absurd. I'm really quite surprised to hear you implying such a thing.
I'm not implying it. I'm saying that there are individuals who are finding that many times children who have had vaccines, particularly the MMR vaccines, end up with gastrointestinal...
None of these papers you're talking about or which are claimed to replicate Wakefield's work even mention vaccines.
All right,
none of them.
Another point, in electronic chatter...
Well, you see, you just move on, don't you? Instead of coming back to address the matter that I'm raising, none of these papers...
No, I have.
Which
I've made my statement, you've made your statement, and it's for the audience to listen to both.
Well, none of these papers make any mention of vaccines. What there is about three or four papers, most of them have never been published or they're abstracts or something, which anecdotally point to children with autism who also have various kinds of bowel disturbance. Well, surprise, surprise, children with autism have all the same diseases as other human beings.
Well, of course they do.
Right.
But the children with autism have diseases that no one else has.
Like
By the way,
what?
Did you ever
well,
read...
Well, apart from their autism, like what?
Well, children with autism cannot function in a normal society. They cannot...
Some can. Some do. Some function surprisingly well. And
the
some
vast
of them
majority
grow
cannot
up to be,
and do not.
To live perfectly respectable, relatively
well,
normal
then
lives.
Then you have a tiny minority because the ones I've interviewed, and I've interviewed over 2,000 parents, their children are not able
well,
to function in a normal way.
Well, I'm surprised you've ever had time to do anything else, Gary, if you've interviewed 2,000 parents of autistic children. I'd be very surprised you've had much time to do anything else.
That was an unnecessary comment, Brian.
Well, I can't imagine how you would do it.
Okay, I mean, we're having a civil debate. I treat you with respect and give you all the time. It's not unnecessary to go to that level of personal attack.
Well, right? I just can't imagine how you would ever find the time to do it.
Well,
because
Brian,
there's so many other things that you're interested in as well. I just can't think of how you do it.
Have you... I'm sure that we can elevate the conversation.
Okay.
Have you read their red books?
What? You're talking about the patient developmental... I haven't read the red books, no.
Okay. Those are extremely revealing.
Well, how do you know that?
Because they're sharing information.
No, but how do you know that they're very revealing?
Well, because they're the ones who are doing the daily analysis.
No, but how do you know that they're very
revealing?
Because
I've interviewed parents.
What, of these 12 children?
Yes.
And you've seen their red books?
I have not seen the red books.
Well, then how do you know they're very revealing?
Because I have to trust what a person tells me.
Well, that could be your mistake, Gary.
So I should not believe when a parent tells me that their children started off poorly and began to improve.
Well, that's a slightly different point, but you need to.
Well, no, that's all part of the red book. They are establishing a progress to see whether or not the analysis.
If you were a medical doctor, or you spent a lot of time really talking to medical doctors about the nature of the medical consultation, you would know how important it is to listen to the patient or listen to the patient's parents. But not actually to necessarily believe it is literally true, because people misremember things, people put strange slants on things, they change their minds about things. And medicine just doesn't work on that. There's some group of patients who you can necessarily believe what they tell you and
What about the 60,000 patients who died who took Vioxx and 100,000 who had heart attacks and strokes?
Indeed, an absolute scandal.
But for 4 years, no one wanted to believe that their heart attacks or strokes or what they were saying to their physicians was relevant. It was
I'd hate to disappoint you, Gary, but I mean, most people who were taking Vioxx, even the ones who dropped down stone dead, were saying things like, this is the first drug that actually dealt with my pain. So it's not a question of these patients coming to their doctors and complaining about things. It's the fact that this drug actually was killing people.
Well, yes, but I also interviewed a physician in Detroit, Michigan, who was a professor of medicine, who said that when he started taking Vioxx, he noticed symptoms and he was foolish, and he said he didn't pay attention to the fact that these symptoms were obvious, and had he done his homework, he would have seen it. And if a physician is not paying attention, and if the world is not paying attention, then someone has to pay attention.
So why are we off on Vioxx when you're supposed to be giving me a hard time about MMR and Dr. Wakefield?
I'm not talking about Dr. Wakefield now.
Well, I thought that's what we were talking about. I mean, I'm not here to defend Vioxx.
Okay, I didn't ask you to defend Vioxx.
The vaccine program.
I was only using that as an example that sometimes when people have symptoms, they cannot readily associate it with a particular drug they're taking.
Well, the Vioxx scandal rested on a very great deal of misrepresentation and misconduct of scientific data. So I would have thought that what you should be doing is on the Wakefield issue is focusing on the question of research integrity, because I think the important thing is that we can be confident, or more confident than we are now, that the material being published in medical journals is true and honestly represents the underlying data concerning
the
patient.
Then we have a difference, because I can show you study after study that much of what goes on in medical literature today is ghostwritten.
Absolutely.
It is fraudulent. The results cannot be trusted. And that's from Dr. Angel and others.
Yeah, absolutely.
By the way, I don't want to mischaracterize anything. Please let me ask this again. Did you publish the documents on your website in 2004?
I've published a great deal of documents. I published a lot of the Ethics Committee papers, correspondence surrounding the Ethics Committee.
But did you publish anything concerning the patients on your website in 2004?
I published the Christian names of some of the children in the series, yes. These were children who'd been extensively run through the media. For example, Mrs. Thomas, who's come up in this conversation several times, has many, many times paraded her children in newspapers and in television programs with all kinds of clinical data and so on and so forth. So I didn't disclose anything new or I never put any patient confidential information like what was wrong with them or anything like that, or where they lived or anything of that kind. And any parent who had not come forward and represented their children in media and had not been in newspapers and so on and so forth, I never identified in any way whatsoever. I think it would be completely improper to do that. But any parent who parades their child through the media, I think it's a bit rich for them to complain about me mentioning their Christian names on my website.
Okay.
Really,
by the way, on that one paper, this was not a published paper. It was a presentation at Medical Conference Montreal, where it said the scientists fear the MMR linked to autism, and this was reported by Sally Beck, where she said new American research shows that there could be a link between the controversial MMR triple
vaccine.
That was
about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was never verified. That was that you're reading. You see, there's another thing that happens on the internet. There's a piece from the Daily Mail by Sally Beck, which the Daily Mail keeps putting the today's date on it, and people such as yourself are always producing this and saying, look, it's just been discovered that Dr. Wakeford is right. I think that's 2006 or something like that, or 2005.
By the way, by reading your articles and hearing what you say, we would be left with the assumption that it was Dr. Wakefield who controlled this whole study, selected all the patients, and was...
Well, he did, yeah.
Well, but the other 12 specialists on here begged to differ, that this
well,
was not
where
one
they
man...
Said that? Where have they said they begged to differ? I've never heard them say that. I would know if they had. I'd be very interested if they had said something different.
Have you personally interviewed all 12 of the people on the...
Not all 12 of them, a good number. Okay. The main ones I've spoken to, yes. I mean, there's one or two junior doctors who didn't really do a great deal I didn't interview. And those I haven't interviewed, I heard their evidence at the GMC. Some of them giving evidence for like 2 days, you know. So, not an issue.
Brian,
there.
We're up to the end of this program.
I hope people visit me at my website, briandeer.com. It's deer with, like the animal. And, you know, they can look at these papers and they can look at my stories that I've written. If they think there's something odd about it, then by all means get in touch. But I think your listeners would think that there was the ring of truth in what I've said. And I'm very happy to talk to you about that.
Brian, thank you very much for coming on and sharing your position with us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on another program. Just a postscript for Brian Deere and our listeners. This mainstream journal now confirms what Dr. Andrew Wakefield and the Royal Free team of specialists found in the Lancet paper in 1998, particularly, quote, the pediatrics medical consensus statement in January 2010 confirming autistic children do have bowel conditions when other children do not. Pediatrics, Volume 125, Supplement, January 2010, page S1 through S18, entitled Evaluation, Diagnosis, and Treatment of Gastrointestinal Disorders in Individuals with ASDs, a Consensus Report. So that's one confirming report of Dr. Wakefield. And then the JAMA paper, December 2010, also confirms Gerberding's claim to CNN, it's not true that Hannah Poehling's mitochondrial dysfunction was rare and that mitochondrial disorders are common in autistic children but not in non-autistic. Quote, Mitochondrial Dysfunction in Autism, Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 304, page 2389 to 2396. Thank you all very much for listening. I'm Gary Nall.
The Gary Nall Show is produced in our New York City studios. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. Our chief archivist is Sharon Pride, and the program director is Carol Lee.